This podcast contains material that some listeners may find distressing. Content includes explicit language and themes related to workplace bullying, harassment, sexual harassment, intimidation, stalking, physical and sexual violence, discussions relating to self-harm and suicidality, disordered eating, other mental health issues, sexism, racism, and homophobia. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Behind Blue Doors podcast, where the women of law enforcement waive their right to remain silent and speak their truth. I'm Susan.
My name is Lisa.
We are your hosts.
In part one, we heard Lee share her story of sexual assault at the hands of a superior. In part two, Lee is going to continue her story and the struggle she faced and how she has overcome and continues to heal.
That was what became unbearable, to watch the service take care of this predator, and then the who was in charge of IA at the time when the abuser was originally charged, not serving him the notice of investigation. You know, it's to me, it was ensuring to push me out of the position. Like, he was pushing me out of the position I was holding at the time. It just became this disgusting behavior, like no integrity. I just see so many yes men and women to further their careers and abuse their power. Like, I began like experiencing my body responding in ways it never had before. The sick feeling in my stomach, anxiousness, as I said, the immense grief of something you trusted and believed in, not only turning its back on you, but then intentionally setting out to discredit, isolate, and push me out of positions, lateral positions, and promotional positions. None of these things I had ever experienced before. The sexual assault and the reporting and being honest about it. I believe like that's what created the toxins in my body and bringing illness to it. Like, it's been years of fighting with this organization I was so naive because I had never been involved in anything. I actually thought there for me. So when I called, it ended up going into like a committee meeting and discussed. So the one of the people sitting in that committee meeting was the that sat at that table and watched me get sexually assaulted and then lied and said he didn't see it. He then is in this committee meeting and takes that information that he's heard and goes to the of the division I was working at and tells him that I'm putting in a complaint against him, which I wasn't at the time. I was like, what? Like, I just called HR to get advice. And it turned into this, and then the reprisal by that, which I had already experienced 3 years before in a different incident, began again. And then he wanted me out of that. Like, he just wanted me out of there. He didn't want to have to deal with me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and it sounds too like there's so many different repercussions, right? So you have these experiences, you're feeling alone, you know, in order to try to protect yourself or function, you have to take a leave. And eventually it affects your physical health, your mental health, your emotional health, your relationships, your financial stability. It really sounds like it's been all encompassing.
Absolutely. Like, I was diagnosed with something else. I shouldn't be considered any less serious.
That's so interesting that you say that, because, you know, the research tells us that approximately 29% of Canadian police officers will experience some symptoms or a diagnosis of PTSD. But when we look at anxiety and depression, the research tells us that over 85% will experience moderate to severe anxiety or depression. And equally, those are equally as debilitating as PTSD. So the fact that only PTSD was recognized for you does not.
No, it's just constantly, it's irrelevant, and it constantly feels like a constant assault on me. I just feel like it's just never ending. Like, and ask myself what is this all for? This is my life. I didn't sign up for this. This is my life. I never saw that this is what was going to happen, you know? I never foresaw that this was, and I've learned to accept that this is the journey that my higher self and the universe has chose for me. I give up ever putting in for promotion again. I give up giving them any control over me. I control me. I have power over me. And once I did not allow them, or in my mindset, to have them have power over me, I felt so much freedom. It took me years to let go of still wanting to be promoted, of still wanting to be seen and heard as the police officer that I, the good officer that I am. It took a long time to let that go. And it's only been in the last couple of months, not even like a month, where I was like, I'm not putting in for promotion again. I'm not doing any of this. I can't. When they've already set me up to fail, you know, their evaluations, my evaluations, if you go back my 20, you know, my, for 17 years, they were glowing. And then all of a sudden, my last, when I put in for promotion, if like 6 months ago or whatever it was, all of a sudden I had doing my evaluation, who I'd never worked for, not one day. And all of a sudden I got 7 progressings out of 10 categories.
What does that mean?
It's competency based. There's 10 competencies and you're rated. There's different ways you can be rated. So, you know, meets. So there's like exceeds in some, meets, progressing and like not meeting standards. So it's like a scale of, I think, 5 things. And for my previous evaluation to have been at meet standards in 8 of the categories and progressing in 2, I was now progressing in 7. And I hadn't even been at work. And I had never worked for this person. It's like, and I said to her, I go, how did I lose my skills? Or how did I become, I go, when I haven't even been here. I haven't been here. And then I was home fighting cancer. How do I now have 7 progressings? How did I lose my skills? Tell me. Oh, well, it's just based on, it was just complete horseshit. it's all set up so that I then become basically, they can't take my rank, but they were demoting me, ultimately is what they're trying to do, in a sycophant way, to have an evaluation done by a senior member you've never even worked for. To me, it was obvious that I was being demoted and degraded for speaking the truth about a senior member of the organization. And it's just been retaliation and constant setbacks. That's become my reality. You know, senior officers telling my at my previous posting how to rate me after I came out and said to them, like, you didn't serve him notice of investigation. Then all of a sudden they're calling my saying, hey, you just did her evaluation and you gave her meets in all the categories. Yeah. She's my permanent acting. She's my acting staff sergeant. Like, she's been acting for me for like a year on and off. Well, like, you know, don't you think you should give her like progressing in conflict management? And he said, no, I've had no issue with her conflict management. Like, she's done a great job on this shift. Like, so these senior officers approached my telling him to change my grading. And then I realized and found out, because then the promotional process started. And one of the new things that had come out in the promotional process was that if you had any progressings in your annual evaluations, then they didn't have to, the senior officers at your division could deny you putting forward for promotion.
So the policies changed, hey?
Oh, they did. And social media policies changed. They made a social media policy soon after myself and a couple of other people became very vocal. Then all of a sudden we had a social media policy. Not only did we have a social media policy, but everyone in the service had to sign it. It's the only one. So it became this, it's about control. Oh, we're losing control. We got it. Okay, now we're going to come up with a social media policy. And it's not even just good enough for them to read it like they do with all the other policies and procedures as they constantly change, right? It's electronic. It gets sent to you. You read the new stuff that's been changed. No, this one, they had to sit down with each member and they had to like sign a piece of paper. They had read it. Like it's just so, I never did. And I purposely didn't even accept the procedure when it was sent in my electronic thing, like opened it, didn't even read it. And I didn't accept it. I was like, I'm not having you control me. And that's what this is. It's about control and them controlling the narrative instead of them doing the right thing and recognizing that they need to change what they're doing.
So you mentioned that you had gone on a leave while all of this was going on.
Yeah.
Did you eventually go back to work?
So, yeah. So I go off when I hear he's being brought back. And then when he gets put back on suspension, when he gets put on suspension after this outside service says to our service, you know, you need to have him on suspension based on the interviews that we've done thus far. So they put him on suspension and I come back. And when I came back, I had a great at the time who recognized what I was going through and put me into a Monday to Thursday position as the sergeant in charge of basically like the community liaison sergeant with, as well as in-house training for the division. And it was great. And I appreciated that she had done that.
Sounds like you had an ally there, hey?
Absolutely. And then she retired. And when she retired, they brought in that I had previously 3 years before had like a minor issue with where he tried to switch me shifts, or he did. He switched me shifts and tried to say it's because he needed a female for searching. Ridiculous. Anyway, we won't get into that. That's like a previous thing. But anyway, I said to my that was retiring, I said, you know, I'm worried about him coming in as the because he was in charge of internal affairs and he's the one who didn't serve the abuser the notice of investigation when he was suspended, you know, working for you because of this happening. His very first day coming to work in front of a morning meeting. So I think he had been there for about a week and I was on vacation. And so I come back. So I hadn't worked with him yet. I'm in the morning meeting with everybody and it's in person. And at the end of the morning meeting, he says, and this is my very first day working with him. And he says, yeah, Lee, I'm going to have to talk to you in the next couple of days. And I'm like, okay. And he says this in front of everybody and I'm mortified because I know what he's doing. And why is he saying that in front of everybody? Just to let them know, look, I'm putting her in her place. Watch this, everybody, you know? And when we walked out of the meeting, I said to one of the other that had been on the shift I was on previously, I said, did he do that in the last week when you were here? Call anybody else out and say that he needed to talk to them? And he's like, no. He goes, but you know what it's about. I'm like, yeah, it's about, and I said the abuser's name. He's like, yeah, that's exactly what it's about. So I leave and I'm in my office and I see the walk by and then I see him walk by again. And then I see him walk by for a third time. And at this, you know, he stops. He's like, yeah, so, you know, and we'll need to have a chat in the next few days. And I was like, you can chat to me right now. Oh, okay. I'm like, come on in. So he comes into my office and he closes the door. And, you know, he's like, well, I just understand that, you know, you have some reservations because of, you know, me working in IA when the abuser was served suspension. And I said, yeah. I said, you know, you didn't serve him notice of investigation. Oh, well, you know, I've been going through my notebooks and, you know, I can't remember if I think I was on vacation and I can't remember who was acting for me. And I was literally like, is this for real right now that he thinks I'm an investigator and you're talking to me like, you know, investigative 101 on lying. Like, and I said, well, sir, I said, I'm going to suggest that you were told not to serve him. Obviously, he didn't like that, but he's stuck in a room with me now. And I said, you know, sir, I'm going to suggest that you were told by not to serve him. Oh, I never says that that didn't happen. I would remember that. Oh, I would remember a conversation like that. And I said, well, he wasn't served. Well, I don't know. And I said, and then he said, I think, you know, Lee, I think it's just an oversight. And I was like, I held it together. I didn't yell or anything, but I looked at him because I'm a pretty strong, outspoken person. And I said, sir, if you're telling me that a member of your service, a high-ranking officer, sexually assaulting one of your female members on this job was not worthy of following policies and procedures, then we have a problem. And he just looked at me and kind of brushed it off. And he's like, you know, I really don't think it was done on purpose. And, you know, and then he does his whole getting out of it spiel, leaves the room. And then the next few weeks, I am friggin' target 101. Then, oh, Lee, we have to post your position. Pardon? Well, it's a TT and we have to post it within within 90 days. I'm like,
sorry, what's a TT?
Temporary transfer. So you're in here as a temporary transfer. And according to the collective agreement, we have to post the spot within 90 days. And I said, well, the spot was posted and no one applied. And so when I came back off of stress leave, I was placed in this role because no other applied for it. And I said I would be willing to do it. And it helped me with the other stuff that's going on for me and health-wise, working a Monday to Friday or Monday to Thursday schedule. And then I went to the association and I said, this is what's happening. So then the association calls them out and then they start floundering and saying, oh no, I don't plan on posting it. And like, it was just games, constant games. And then they reached out to my previous and telling him that he needs to change my ratings on my PADP. And I was like, I'm out of here.
Sorry, what's a PADP?
Your personal development form, your yearly evaluation you have to put in where you evaluate yourself and they evaluate and then your boss evaluates you, like you grade yourself and rate yourself and then yours, or depending on what rank you are, the rank above you does your rates it as well. And I was not well and I was so angry that this was happening to me, that this was continuing, and I went back on stress leave. And while I was on, so that was in October of 2019. And then in January, so I was off during that time. And then while I was off, they were trying to bring me back to work. And I had agreed, my doctor had said, she can come back to work. But under these conditions, she's not to have this person, this person, this person, and this person overseeing her or being her boss, because of the retaliation that she has received from these people. And so they were like, okay. So then what did they do? They put me into, they say, okay, we have a spot in the Criminal Investigation Bureau as an overflow person. I'm like, I'm sorry. So I'm sorry, I won't be supervising anybody, even though I'm a, so you're demoting me. No, you're still getting paid as a. And I said, you literally have a spot right now on one of the other shifts where you have an acting, so you have a who is acting. I am of full rank and earned my full rank, and you're going to give me an overflow spot where I'm not supervising anybody. So what you're doing is you're demoting me and making me look like a broken toy in this division to all of the officers. How dare you? No, I'm not going to be there. Yep, we'll see you Monday morning. I didn't go. I said, I'm not coming in. I'm like, you're not demoting me. There's actually a spot available for me. And then HR had the nerve to say, well, he could grieve that we took the acting away from him. I'm like, I'm sorry. He can grieve a position that he doesn't have. And what about me? I already hold that position, but you're not concerned that I could grieve it. Like, you don't care. It was so gross. so gross and ass backwards. Like, it doesn't even make sense. And then while that was happening, I found the lump in my breast and then was diagnosed with the cancer. So go through all the cancer treatments and stuff like that. And then the following October, I began working from home. I had gone in October 2020 for 3 days. In those 3 days, that's when the in Criminal Investigation Bureau gave me my evaluation on my promotional, because I was still putting in for promotion and stuff. I'm like, screw this. Like, I'm not just going to give up. I totally have a different mindset now, but at the time I'm like, I'm not going to, like, I've worked hard for this. And that's when she sits me down on my second day back after knowing I've been off on stress leaves, been off with cancer. She pulls me in and then does this, you know, okay, 7 progressings. And I'm like, oh my God, like, this doesn't even stop. I've literally been here for less than 24 hours and it begins again. And I'm like, I'm out of here. I'll work from home. I told my association I'll work from home, and which I had asked to do before they made me come back to work. Because literally when I came back to work, I had an infection in my breast from the surgery, and that knew that and wasn't like, okay, you should go home. Like, you know, it was so embarrassing. I couldn't even wear a bra because of the surgery and everything. And my breasts were so swollen. It was so embarrassing. And I went home and I was able to get to agree to let me work from home. And then that's what I did till January. And then they were like, sorry, we don't have any work for you to do from home. But all the pregnant women at work have been sent home to work from home because of COVID, but we found work for them, but we don't have anything for you to do. I was like, okay. So I wasn't ready to come back. So I went on long-term disability until April of this year, April 26th. And I was like, I couldn't afford to be off anymore, even though mentally I was just like, this isn't, like, I'm going to go in and do it and put on a face, but I know this isn't best for me and my health. And I went. And I was there until just recently when I was served notice of investigation for my social media bulletin board and emails. And then the next day, suspended.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, people at work are like, you wanted to be suspended. Yes.
Wow, Lee. It sounds like you've been through so, so much. You talked a bit before about you weren't diagnosed with PTSD, but, you know, other diagnoses. And how have you managed your physical health, mental health, and kind of, if we think about it as a recovery journey or being in the thick of it, or can you walk us through your journey that way?
I feel like I've changed so much, but sometimes it's in a good way because I feel freedom from the cult. I never knew I was in a cult, and being free of it and then speaking about it now, the cult wants me to be quiet really badly. So I do live in fear to a certain extent. I have seen the lengths and extents that they will go to, and not even with me, with other officers, with their homes being broken into, their phones being tapped, their social media getting all screwy and weird, like, you know. And then of course we're crazy, right? Oh, they're crazy. They, you know, it's like, no, this is legit happening. These are the lengths that the police service will go to keep the narrative of what they want. So physically, obviously it's affected me. Mentally, it's affected me. At the same time, I'm trying to use my spirituality and my leadership skills that I believe in, and that I'm just trying to get that voice out there. So I've been on a spiritual journey that I started in 2010, and I'm very grateful for that. It's when I went into the Special Victims Unit. That unit was very difficult to work in. I wanted to take all the children home. Most of my cases were sexual assault and abuse with children. The unit also deals with sexual assaults with adults. Most of my cases were with children. That was just sort of my niche, and talking and interviewing with kids, giving them power and strength as much as I could, and helping them through the court process. So I started a spiritual journey in 2010 to cope. And I've worked very hard to have control over my thoughts. And I'm just really grateful I began that journey when I did, because it's given me the strength and power over my autonomy. I've learned to love myself. I tell myself every day, I look in the mirror and I say, I love you. I, the center of me, my soul, I love you. And I say that to myself every day. And it's given me freedom, and freedom from even behind the blue doors. I gave myself that freedom. I want to talk a little bit about what I think is missing, sort of in these masculine energy organizations. And that's nothing, I'm not saying anything negative about masculine energy. Here's what I want to say. The divine feminine energy, which is, I think right now is becoming, there's a huge shift happening. And that's why you're seeing all these women coming forward and having the strength to, because it's supposed to happen right now in this time. It's the divine feminine energy versus the masculine energy. And divine feminine energy is without barriers. It's the synergy in all of us, like masculine and feminine. It's the synergy in all of us. Everything, as I was saying, carries both the masculine, the feminine, the entire universe, and of course, humans. And this is no matter how you identify, that we have both of these. The feminine is lunar, cooling, and receptive. The attributes are like intuition and empathy, nurturing, kindness. Masculine energy is solar, warming, and active. And the attributes are, you know, power, aggressive, ambition. And when we're balanced within the two is when we have the perfect harmony. And the dominance of masculine power is everywhere right now. So if we look at police, military, fire, EMS, they seem to clearly come from like this masculine energy power source. And when the masculine is considered superior to the feminine, it creates imbalance, which in turn creates a life that is joyless. And I just see so many police women and police officers looking joyless, because police men also, we all of us have the divine feminine within us. But in these cultures, it's so repressed. And I believe it's the void of the divine feminine in these institutions that have perpetuated the abuse towards women. Like, more women are becoming aware and woke, or whatever you want to call it. And we're seeking balance and equality. And only when these organizations implement genuine transparency, and I like to call it ECC, and I do a little, you know, you down with ECC? Yeah, you know me. It's like empathy, care, compassion. Can women first responders find balance and joy?
I think you bring up a really important point that it doesn't only impact women, but it impacts men as well on such a great level. There are so many wonderful male police officers as well, or in male-dominated organizations. And I know for my spouse, like, I know he doesn't want to be viewed as a perpetrator or have someone assume all these negative things about him because of the way that men are portrayed, right?
It's such a masculine, it's just the energy is so, and when all you have is the masculine energy, like, you can't thrive. None of us can just thrive in that, you know, and that's why I think there's this huge shift happening right now, because women are, it's meant to happen right now, that the divine feminine energy is, you know, through meditation and yoga and all and spirituality and accepting ourselves and kindness and love and accepting our intuition and all of those things, it's changing the narrative. And these organizations don't seem to get it.
What comes to mind is just how much, what the length that the police services will go through to protect the predator. And, you know, and like Susan said, there's so many wonderful male police officers. So it's just so, why are they doing this? Why are these men making it to the top? And why are they maintaining the status quo?
And it seems too, like, when we talk about, okay, we can put policies into place and we can do all those things, but there's this old saying, I don't know where it comes from, but culture eats policy for breakfast. It's getting at kind of the core of what are those core cultural beliefs that kind of dominate these policing organizations, as we see in the research, but it goes beyond policing, right? It's kind of those overarching societal beliefs.
Absolutely.
That still kind of persist and remain today.
What I see in place in these male-dominated organizations, and when I say male-dominated, I just mean there's probably 80% more men than women, like in policing. And, you know, it's a very Machiavellian, tyrannical type of management style that is so outdated, but it continues because of this colonial patriarchy system that policing is built in. And like, so if they really want to make change, they need to change how, like, the approach and how they're doing things, you know, like, in order for the organizations to move into like a thriving, sustainable, healthy environment for, you know, employee retention, well-being, like, they need to become leaders, like the implementation of a feminine energy, like they need to implement care, compassion. And the thing is they know they need to do that. And so what I'm seeing right now is the fake empathy, care, compassion. Oh, I hear you. You know, we're wearing our green epaulettes on our shoulders for mental health. You're wearing your green epaulette for mental health and you're literally pulling me in and saying things you shouldn't be saying to me.
So you're talking the talk, but not walking the walk, hey?
And it's all lip service for the community. Look what we're doing. We care about mental health. We care about racism. We care about sexism. No, you don't. Because then you would be actually doing real things about it. But you're trying to show the public that you support those things by wearing green epaulettes and wearing pink epaulettes for world cancer, you know, for cancer. And, you know, you didn't let me be off and get well and pay me at, like, you know, at this random approved time off like you did for the accused when I had cancer, right? Like, it just, none of what they say, it's all lip service, and it's to appease the narratives and the community. But it's so obvious that it's lip service. Like, anybody who's got a brain can see that that's what they're doing.
So that leads me to two questions. First is, obviously, it sounds like you've really been through the ringer. It's been not an easy experience, to say the least. What has gotten you through it, one? And two, what do you believe? Like, if you could, let's say, wave a magic wand tomorrow, what things would you do or what steps would you take to ensure that that change occurs?
Social media provided a space to be heard where otherwise I wasn't. And once I was connected to all these other women and people who were fighting the same fight, I was like, oh my God, I'm not alone. I knew I wasn't, but I didn't know I could connect with these people and actually talk with them. And as it's happened, it just grows and grows and grows, which is so unfortunate. Like, it makes me so angry to know that this is just so rampant and we all know it. But to have the support and realize you're not alone and has been amazing. I mean, social media really opened the doors for victims to speak and get things out there, you know, and I'm so grateful for that. I get strength from my family, my friends. I've lost a lot of friends, and I've purposely cut a lot of people out of my life that I recognize are not on the same journey as me in life. And they don't have to be on the same journey, but if you don't support what I'm doing, or if you continue to stand back as a naysayer in the police service, then I don't have a lot of time for you. Brave is beautiful. And you're called brave all the time as a police officer because you go to calls and you're there to save people and fix situations and save everyone's problems. But no one's brave when it comes to telling the truth about what's happening behind blue doors. So I have always been a fairly strong personality. Them trying to quiet me has made me want to be louder because I don't have the desire anymore to be a part of their system. They took away from me those desires, and those aren't my desires any longer. It's not my goal. My goal is to speak about what's happening so that other women and other men who are being bullied and harassed and abused or being held down below that glass ceiling because of they're black or they're brown or gay or whatever the situation may be, that I know that I'm, whether they have the courage or strength to say anything at this time, I know I'm providing, because I've been told and women have reached out to me to say, thank you. Thank you. You've given me courage to at least feel not alone. I'm still not ready to come forward. And I don't think anyone should come forward if that's not what they're ready to do. And it's, they do need to know what's going to happen to them. And it's not pretty. Like, why would anybody want this?
Yeah. I love that you acknowledge that it's really important to have that space for both people who want to come forward, but those who don't as well, and acknowledge that it's okay.
Yeah.
That everybody is on a different journey. And if the timing is not right, that's okay.
Right.
You're not alone.
Yeah. You're not alone. And that's why, if even just hearing us speak about it helps them get the courage to maybe even just talk to a psychologist or a counselor and say, hey, like, even to just talk about it with someone else, like to be like, you know, to feel, especially I find male police officers aren't as quick to receive help. And that's all stigma too, right? Around mental health and things like that. So that makes me continue to grow and to speak, because I've had so many women reach out to me, both on the police service and off this police service and in other police services across the world. And holy cow, this is a global problem. And it's already been found in numerous trials and findings that this is systemic in the police workplaces. But no one's doing it. They're like, okay. And like, and then again, the lip service, okay, we're going to implement this women's group. And, you know, we're going to, you know, it's like, no, no, no.
And what comes, you obviously can do something about it. Because as before, as I said, look at the lengths that they went through to try to keep you silenced or to demote you, not necessarily outright demote you.
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're, and then putting you in a position where you're not even supervising someone. That's the role of a, so it is a demotion.
Of course.
So they can do it, but they're not, they're choosing not to. And it's when it's, it sounds like they're choosing not to when it's the predator.
Yeah.
Well, and they're threatened, right? So obviously you are highly intelligent, hardworking, passionate, and all those beautiful skills that you possess, they don't want any of it. So that then leads me to the question. The second part is, what do you envision? How do you envision change happening? If you could wave a magic wand tomorrow, what would you do?
Oh God, I would have a women's police association separate from the men's, a safe place that the reporting structure would change. So you wouldn't have to report these things through your chain of command, that there would be a separate private entity that women can go to report what's happening. And so that it can go through the proper investigative legal processes, not these ones that are done internally, which are not, they're not done like we do a fair process for our other investigations that we do for the public. They've made me know that I can't be a victim. I did not know when I swore my oath that I was signing up to not be allowed to report and be a victim. I did not know I signed up for that until this happened. And I was like, oh.
Can you just say that again and explain that?
So when I swore my oath as a police officer, I didn't know it was giving up my rights to have a safe workplace. I didn't know it was giving up my rights to not be physically touched and harassed sexually in the workplace. I had no idea I was giving up my rights as a civilian, as a regular serving member of society.
Is this part of the Police Services Act?
No.
That stipulates
this? No, I'm saying that's clearly, there's nothing that says it, but that's what it is. It's not our, the sexual assaults that I know of the women who have come forward, they have not even been investigated like you would investigate a sexual assault working in Special Investigations Unit or sex crimes or whatever they call it in whatever organization you work for.
Yeah. See, the reason I ask is I've heard from other women that under jurisdictions, police acts that if you come forward, you can actually, you cannot actually be the victim of a crime or a complaint if it happens within the workplace because of your role as police officer, whether it's in the physical workplace or outside of, because you are a police officer, you can't actually be a victim. So I was just curious to see if that had applied to you.
I don't think that that's
okay.
What I see is that it's the rules and policies and procedures that they have in place, just they automatically take away your rights as a victim. Once you know that, okay, so let's look at this abuser that my allegations were substantiated against. He is at least two sexual assaults at least are substantiated, and at least four sexual harassments. Okay, and you have a person in a position of trust or authority. According to the criminal code, if you have a person that is in a position of trust or authority and there's been more than one sexual assault, that shit's in the media. That person's face is in the media asking for the public, and if there's any, they know this person, and asking people to come forward if they have been abused by this person. Well, that didn't happen. They hid it from the media. They didn't even charge them under the PSA. So they don't follow their own policies and procedures. Like, they just use them in whatever way they want to manipulate what they want. Mm-hmm. And there was something else that I think so important that I know I need to say. And I need to say this because I know so many police women have experienced this, including myself. I want to talk about the narrative that gets put out there about police women after we report sexual assault. The conversation then becomes about the people that we have had sex with. Consensual sexual relationships are then put on the table to discuss, to use against women in the workplace for abuse and retaliation. And this has been used for decades to prevent and intimidate. And ultimately, you're shaming us on purpose. And sexual assault survivors, like, you're shaming them from speaking their truth. You know, when I look at, you know, the people saying things about me and the sexual consensual relationships I've had in the past, are you kidding me? None of the men that I know that have been charged under the PSA or criminal charges, no one talks about who they had sexual pasts with, sexual consensual relationships with. Nobody is talking about that. Nobody talks about them. But when women who are victims or who are, you know, being talked about at work, are past, and this has got to be, this narrative has to be dismantled. And it comes from the top down.
And victim blaming, where people will ask, well, why did that woman go into that situation? Why did she go there? And just because a woman goes somewhere does not give them the right to sexually assault her. Even if the woman went to the person's house, it's not okay to sexually assault that woman. So that also needs to be dismantled, because I hear that all the time.
Absolutely.
And it's so frustrating. If I go on a date with a man and I happen to go to his house, that does not give you the right to then force sex on me.
No, period. No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying in these situations where it's consensual, why are we talking about it? We both chose as adults in to date or whatever. Like, that was my choice. But you don't get to touch me or do anything to me without my choice and consent.
I think, too, the use of, you know, these past consensual sexual relationships, it's used as a tool to demean and distract and discredit.
Yes.
Right? Because we can shift the blame, or we can shift the spotlight from the perpetrator onto the victim.
Yes.
And, well, you had done this and you had done that, or, you know what I mean?
Yes.
This wouldn't happen to you.
Exactly. It's the shaming, and it doesn't happen to the men, you know, and that's all that really needs to be said about that. Right. It's not being said about the men. So right there, you know that it's a bias.
So if there were any police leaders listening, what would you want them to know, or what would you want to say to them about how they could affect change?
That integrity matters, that when you have made a mistake or you have done something wrong in a leadership position, the best way for you to continue to have trust from your people is to own it. Own it. Yes, we did that wrong. We could have done that better. And we're going to try and we're aiming to do that better. And I'd like to actually talk to you about how to do that better. I'm sorry. I'm sorry this happened to you. The focus for them is on how they, like the narrative in the public. And it's just so old school thinking. It's not the leadership of today. And it's not how you're going to keep your employees. Like, you actually need to care. You actually need your HR to be concerned about the amount of people that are off sick. Why are we all off sick when most of it's from internal abuse? It's a hard job. We're dealing with your, you know, 20 years of going to and seeing how many dead bodies, how many burn bodies, how many dead babies, how many, you know, how many women I've seen abused, burned, beat up, like all of it, like gang shootings, like just all of it. It's a lot. And then you add on top of it, it's almost worse, the internal abuse that happens. I was hired to go to those scenes, and I managed them, and I was able to deal with them. But to see the when you're management just really, they're doing it so wrong. And they're promoting people through cronyism. That's my buddy. That's my so-and-so. Like, that's my, and I know that that's everywhere. I get it. But it's not, you're not bringing your best leaders forward when that's how you choose. You know, our current pulled in, so was doing a process for deputies. And my understanding is there was like 89 applicants from around the country. And out of 89 applicants, the top 12 included his two best friends from the previous police service he worked at. Well, they're the ones who get hired as that is not a, are you like, and I can understand if these were like the best people for the job, and I don't know these people from Adam. What I do know is their education. And I know that in our service, with their lack of education, they wouldn't even be able to get promoted to sergeant. And these are our two net. It's cronyism. You know, when everyone says, well, you got to understand, he needed to have someone he trusted because he wasn't from our service. Okay. I get you want someone he trusts, but this is the problem. This is the narrative that's the problem. It's cronyism. So you've pulled in someone you can trust so you guys can continue to do your dirty work. It's your cronies.
Yeah. Sounds like the policies and procedures of, you know, promotion
or
hiring aren't transparent. Sounds like perhaps there's some bias.
Absolutely.
Right? That is coming through because of the way those policies and procedures are implemented.
Well, you're telling me that a transparent process where you hired a company to come up with your best applicants ends up with two from your previous police service who happen to be your buddies and also don't have the education that many of the other applicants had. When, like, and I'm not saying education is the be all and end all. I'm not. But if you require me to have certain education level to get promoted, or at least have the points to get the points to get to get to an interview stage based on having the education, why wouldn't it be the same for a it's just, it's so obvious what they did. And it's, you know, why did you hire a company? You hired a company to make it look transparent when you didn't even need to hire that company. You already knew what you were going to do.
sounds like there was a lack of neutrality in that decision-making that happened.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And, you know, and like I said, the response from so many people as well, you know, I get it. Like he did need to have someone he can trust because he was, you know, never worked for our service before. And I was like, and that's my thing. Here's my thing about leadership. A real leader, I don't need to bring people along to like make me feel safe, right? Like to me as a leader, like if you're a real leader, you can work with any of these people, any of the people that are under your command right now. You figure out who those people are. You find out who you can trust and who you can't trust that's there. You determine by their behavior and by what they do. And if you have integrity and if you're somebody who wants to actually make change, you don't need your buddies. You need to figure out who's around you that has the same vision as you. And if they don't, you let them go. See ya.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I hear that all the time, and I think that's a key point. Leadership and popularity are two different things.
Yes.
And when you're a leader, you have to stop. It's not a popularity contest. You have to yes. have the qualities that make you a qualified candidate to do that.
Well, it makes me think too of, I don't know if you've heard of servant leadership.
Yes.
Yes, right? So servant leadership is the idea that as a leader, it's your job to make sure the people that you're leading succeed.
Yes.
So what do they need to succeed? It's not about making yourself look good, because if you can empower your staff and encourage them and provide a safe working environment that allows for ideas and growth, you know, that empathy, self-awareness, and really stewardship
yes.
towards your staff, that goes a really, really, really long way in terms of productivity and boosting morale and creating cohesion.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you nailed it. That's exactly it. And that's not what's happening. Like, and again, that's not even the word. It's because of the system policing is based on. So I don't know how long this is going to take to break it down. I don't know. Like I envision such a, like how different it could be. I just don't think I'm going to be alive for it. That makes me sad. Like, and I just mean, and I don't mean that I'm going to have a short life. I mean that it's going to take, because, you know, sometimes I get into this, when I got into this battle, it's like, you know, I'm like, oh my God, there's been women doing this for hundreds and hundreds of years. Hundreds of years that women have been fighting, and I'm like, and we're still doing it. And I honestly believe it's become a movement because we have access to social media and we can share the truth.
Yeah, it's that shared experience. And that was one of the things from my research and kind of the catalyst really to creating this podcast with Lisa was that, you know, it's that shared experience and being able to have those relationships with others that have been through the same and know that you're not alone.
Yeah.
And know that you have a safe space to come forward and speak your truth.
Yeah. Well, and to the point that like they've literally in my organization charged like myself and another female were served notices of investigation for a social media one prior to me, and she was charged under the PSA and I just find it, I think it's really quite funny. You know, we've got some men in the service that are committing sexual offenses and he's not on suspension. I'm like, it's literally used to silence us. Like to be suspended for speaking my truth about what's happening. And what they like to say is because you're not allowed to say disparaging things against the organization. And I'm like, it upsets me because I'm like, I'm not saying about that he's a bad person or that he's an a-hole or that I'm not attacking him personally at all. I'm begging him to help me. I'm begging him to see what's happening. I'm begging for change. And to me, that is not discriminatory against the, that is not disparaging against the or the workplace. I'm like, how about you just recognize that it's actually happening? I'm not doing it as a, you know, you're a terrible person or I hate you, or it's literally coming from a place of, oh my God, please see what's happening. Please help me. Please support me. And for that, and for being vocal about it, I'm suspended. And it's like, okay, I accept that suspension. But the thought of even speaking to them right now, like, it's not happening. I don't know if I would, you know, this is part of the illness. I don't know that I can keep my calm and keep cool talking to anyone from work right now. It's very, very triggering for me. You know, I went through a period of time where even seeing a cruiser would, like, the amount of hate I would feel, and it upset me so much the first time that happened. I was like, oh my God, I used to drive by cruisers and I would always look to make sure that they were safe. And then I would drive by them and I would get anxious.
I think that's really important to bring up too, is that women who have had these experiences, they go into survival mode when there are triggers, right? So that's that fight, flight, or freeze response. Yeah. And that doesn't look the same for everybody. Everybody has a different one. So it's really important to acknowledge that when we are triggered and we are in that state, it becomes our normal coping mechanisms get completely overwhelmed, and we can act in ways that perhaps to others who don't understand that biological response might look irrational, or they don't understand. Yeah. But it's an education to try to understand where someone is at and where they're coming from that can help to change this, right? Or giving that person that space and recognizing that they're in that place at that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And that has subsided, where when I see police cruisers now, I'm able to look and I always want to make sure that if they're, you know, they're okay, the officer's okay. But there was a period of time where that wasn't the case. I was so triggered and angry seeing a police vehicle, the thought of going to work and even having to like engage with people, that I knew I couldn't trust anybody anymore. And I mean, I remember the day I got suspended, I came home. And even though I knew what I was doing could get me suspended, and that I was like, I'm not going to stop speaking my truth. I'm not going to have them silence me. So when I was suspended and I had to hand in all of my equipment and everything, my badge, my everything, I came home and I felt stripped. And I was so, I don't know how to put it, I couldn't concentrate. So I walked around my main floor, just sort of unable to, I knew I had things I had to do. And I had someone here, a girlfriend of mine, to sort of just like help me get through the night. And I just kept wandering around my house and like picking things up. And I couldn't like, I had to, and then the panic attack started and I had to do some serious breath work with my girlfriend and got myself back into a state of being able to cope. There's been moments of like, you know, my daughter is my strength and what keeps me going.
On that note, Lee, since we don't have much time left, if you could say anything to the women listening or anybody who is the target of bullying, harassment, assault, sexual harassment, sexual and physical violence in their workplace, what would you say?
I would say that you need to recognize you as yourself and what is best for you and your family in any of the decisions that you make. I want them to understand that it is a hard, long road. It will not be made easy. That if you do choose to speak, you will have a ton of support. And there's lots of people there to support you. If you feel like you can't cope, you need to reach out to somebody. And none of your coping has to be in the public. That's been the venue I chose and many of us have chose, but that's certainly not for everybody. So don't fight it alone. There are many of us, and I talk to many people who share their stories with me, and it is kept private. I'm not here to share other people's stories unless I have their permission. So keep speaking your truth, whether it's in a diary, whether it's to your psychologist, your counselor, close friends, people who have been through it, keep speaking your truth. You did nothing wrong. You did nothing wrong. And this isn't okay. None of this is okay. And I'm going to continue to fight and police women around the world who are being vocal. We are going to continue to do that and to give you space to feel heard and supported.
Thank you so much today, Lee, for sharing your story and being here. I know for me personally, you're an inspiration, and it's women like you who have helped me to feel comfortable coming forward and speaking my truth.
Oh, thank you.
Not so much so in social media, but in different ways. So I really want to thank you for everything that you're doing and who you are as a person, as a leader, all of it.
Thank you so much. That's really nice to hear, because don't get many compliments nowadays. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm so grateful for what you're doing, and I wish you great success. I am really looking forward to hearing what other women are going to be speaking, and I just can't wait to connect. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us today. Be sure to subscribe to the Behind Blue Doors podcast to catch the latest episodes. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And check out our website at www.behindbluedoors.org. Take care, and until next time.